This is the Blaze Radio On Demand.
Hello, America. Welcome to the Glenn Beck Program. We've got a great show for you today. I've got a couple of items from the vault that we just got in yesterday. One of them is just so tremendous. It's a letter from Calvin Coolidge, who we were just talking about as we get ready to go on the air. The guys have not heard the letter yet. I'm going to share it with them together with you. Calvin Coolidge, how outrageous is it, now that we've all done our homework on Calvin Coolidge, how outrageous is it to say the best presidents in the United States may be George Washington, Abraham Lincoln, Calvin Coolidge?
Not outrageous at all.
No.
I mean,
not at all.
Not at all. This guy is so underrated and nobody knows him. Nobody knows him. You want the answer on how to fix things? Go to Calvin Coolidge. We're going to talk about that. I've got something that I said to the Mercury librarian for the American experience and the human experience. I said, I read one line in a book I was reading. I said, we have to see if we can find one of these. Well, we did. I can't believe we did. And I'm going to show you something you've never even known of. Coming up in just a few minutes. Stand by for that. Also, we have Bill O'Reilly on the program today. We have Matt Walsh is going to stop by. We have part two of the true history of the Democratic Party. And we're going to start with where we left it off yesterday in the first hour, and that is the future. Elon Musk has a billion-dollar crusade to stop what he calls the AI apocalypse. This is something that you, as a guy who works in a cubicle, a guy who runs his own business, a salesperson, a farmer, you need to understand what we are facing as human beings in the next 10 to 20 years. Because everything changes with this, and some of the smartest people in the world are warning, don't do it. People of the world, wake up. Don't do it. We begin there with Elon Musk's new billion-dollar strategy to save the world. It's going to sound crazy. We begin there right now.
Of entertainment and enlightenment. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
I want to share something with you that is going to sound absolutely crazy. Much more crazy than when I said we're going to be able to print everything. We're going to be able to print organs. We're going to be able to print guns. Remember when I brought the 3D printer on about 4 years ago? And we were printing little stupid things. And I don't remember who it was, one of the cameramen. It was Justin, right? One of the cameramen was on, and he just shook his head, and I printed a little Batman head for him. And he was like, this is ridiculous. We're not going to be able to print these things. I mean, okay, sci-fi, and we're going to get flying cars too. And a year later, we had a guy on the show who gave us a printed, 3D printed gun that works. The world is changing, and what this is going to sound like is you're either a Luddite and you don't want technology, which is not true. I don't think there's any way to stop this. I think Elon Musk is right on his approach. Or it just sounds so like a movie, like Terminator, that you're fighting robots. And I want you to know that you shouldn't fear the robots. That's not what I'm saying. I want you to hear a story that is on Elon Musk and his billion-dollar crusade to stop the AI apocalypse. That's the headline. It starts with a story that I gave you yesterday in hour number one of this broadcast. And it's Elon Musk, and it's Demi, what's his name? Hassabis. And Demi and Elon are having lunch at SpaceX. And Elon says, I'm working on this is the most important project for all of humanity right now. His trip to Mars. Pat doesn't even think that trip to Mars is going to happen. Mm-mm. It will. I'm telling you now, we will colonize Mars, and it won't be done by a government. It will be done by Elon Musk, and here's why. Demi says, no, you're not working on the most important project. I am. Now, he's in charge of DeepMind. DeepMind is the Google project that is gobbling up everybody who's working on AI, artificial super intelligence. And they are racing, Google and DeepMind are racing to artificial intelligence. Now, artificial intelligence is going to be fantastic. We will, through artificial intelligence, we're going to be able to figure out cures to cancer. It's so far beyond any supercomputer. It will be able to learn itself. You won't have to program. You won't have to build it. It will build itself. It will teach itself. It's true artificial intelligence. It is living intelligence. And it will be so far. We will look like mice to this intelligence. He said, Demi said, well, no. I'm working on the most important project for humankind. I'm working on artificial superintelligence. And that's when Elon Musk said, no, the reason why I'm going to Mars is to make sure there's a human outpost because you're going to get us all killed. Now, as crazy as that sounds, these conversations are happening. And they're happening a lot in Silicon Valley with some of the smartest people out there. People who agree with Elon Musk that this could be the end of all humanity within the next 40 years are Bill Gates and Stephen Hawking and a long list of others. But those are pretty prominent guys. So if you read this story, let me just give you a couple of them. Some in Silicon Valley were intrigued to learn that Hassabis, a skilled chess player and former video game designer, once came up with a game called Evil Genius, featuring an evil scientist who creates a doomsday device to achieve world domination. Peter Thiel, the billionaire venture capitalist Donald Trump advisor who co-founded PayPal with Musk and others, and who in December helped gather skeptical Silicon Valley titans, including Musk, to meet with Donald Trump, told me a story about an investor in DeepMind who joked as he left a meeting, quote, does anybody else feel like we ought to shoot Hassabis now because we're approaching our last chance to save the human race? Elon Musk began warning about the possibility of AI running amok 3 years ago. Probably hadn't eased his mind when one of Hassabis's partners in DeepMind, Shane Legg, stated flatly, I think human extinction will probably occur, and this technology will play a part in it. Okay, so wait. Shouldn't we put the brakes on that? I mean, if somebody said that in your office and other great minds around the world were saying the same thing, wouldn't it be time for you to say, hey, guys, can we just stop for a second?
I oddly do work in an office where someone says that fairly regularly, just so we can point that out.
All right, well.
You do? Where's that?
I don't know.
Weird.
Before DeepMind was gobbled up by Google in 2014 as part of its Google AI shopping spree, Musk had been an investor in DeepMind. He told me that his involvement was not about a return on his money, but rather to keep a wary eye on the arc of AI. It gave me more visibility into the rate at which things are improving. I think they're improving at an accelerating rate far faster than anybody realizes. Mostly because in everyday life, you don't see robots walking around. Maybe your Roomba or something, but a Roomba is not going to take over the world.
In a startling public reproach to his friends and fellow techies, Musk warned that they could be creating the means of their very own destruction. He told Bloomberg's Ashley Vance, the author of the biography of Elon Musk, that he was afraid that his friend Larry Page, the co-founder of Google and now the CEO of its parent company, Alphabet, could have perfectly good intentions but still produce something very evil by accident, including possibly a fleet of artificial intelligence-enhanced robots capable of destroying all of mankind. Sometimes what will happen is a scientist will get so engrossed in their work that they really don't realize the ramifications of what they're doing. Having some sort of merger with biological intelligence and machine intelligence, it may not be the be the way to escape human obsolescence, a Vulcan mind meld, if you will. We're basically already there. We're already cyborgs. Your phone and your computer are extensions of you, but the interface is through finger movements or speech, which are very slow. We're now looking at a neural interlace, a lace inside of your skull that would flash data from your brain wirelessly to your digital devices or to virtually any unlimited computing power in the cloud for a means of partial brain interface. We are roughly 4 years away from that.
4 years away from
thinking and it doing.
So you're not touching a screen.
You're not touching anything.
You're just thinking, I want the temperature to go up in this room.
And it goes up.
What?
Okay, yes.
That's going to be
the most. 4 years?
Now, we're 4 years away. Did anybody see the article yesterday that came out?
No way.
For the first...
That can't
Pat, for the first time, somebody now has received the first real bionic legs that... It operates exactly like your legs do. You think and it does. Where the others, you have to kind of...
I saw that documentary. That's...
Yeah. Others, you have to start moving. You have to start moving and get, you know, and get it to move for you. This is now bionic. I believe they were legs. That as you think, it happens. And they have them now with hands.
Are people being fitted with those?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Are they really?
The first one was fitted and it's working now.
How
and that was
a
story yesterday. Yeah.
That's.
So what's the difference between that and this?
Can we quickly point out that if you can think, I want the temperature to be higher in this room, the divorce rate is going to be 100% in this country.
My wife and I are thermostatically incompatible.
He went on and said, with artificial intelligence, we are summoning a demon. You know all those stories where there's the guy with the pentagram and the holy water, and he's like, listen, we can control the demon. I'm just going to call it forth. It doesn't work out, said Musk. Let's see. Musk is stoic about his setbacks, but all too conscious of nightmare scenarios. Man has the power to act as his own destroyer. And that is the way he's acted through most of history. We are the first species capable of self-annihilation. Here's the nagging thought that you can't escape as you drive around from glass box to glass box in Silicon Valley. The lords of the cloud love to yammer about turning the world into a better place as they churn out new algorithms, apps, and inventions that, it is claimed, will make our lives easier, healthier, funny, closer, cooler, longer, and kinder to the planet. And yet, as you drive around after these meetings, there's a creepy feeling underneath it all, a sense that we are the mice in their experiments, that they regard us humans as Betamaxes or 8-tracks, old technology that will soon be discarded so they can get on with enjoying their new sleek world. Many people have already accepted this future. We'll live to be 150 years old, but we'll have machine overlords. They argue not about whether, but rather how close we are to replicating, improving, and replacing ourselves. Sam Altman, the 31-year-old president of Y Combinator, the Valley's top start accelerator, believes humanity is on the brink of such invention. The hardest part of standing on an exponential curve is when you look backward, it looks flat. When you look forward, it looks vertical. It's hard to calibrate how much you're moving because it always looks the same. You'd think that anytime Musk, Stephen Hawking, and Bill Gates are raising the same warning about AI, as all of them are, it would be a 10-alarm fire. But for a long time, the fog of fatalism over Bay Area was thick. Musk's crusade was viewed as a Luddite view. The paradox...
I mean, Elon Musk is not a Luddite.
No.
I think that's pretty clear.
The paradox is this. Many tech oligarchs see everything they're doing to help us and all of their benevolent manifestos as street lamps on the road to a future where, as Steve Wozniak says, humans are the street lamp's pets. Musk is not going gently. He plans on fighting this with every fiber of his carbon-based being. Musk and Altman have founded OpenAI. Now, this is the way to solve it. OpenAI, a billion-dollar nonprofit company to work for safer artificial intelligence. His view is nobody's going to be able to stop this. Nobody's going to be able to stop this. You cannot put the genie back in the bottle. And we're going to start having people within 10 years that are uploading and are transhumans. They are what's called transhumanism. As we're talking about the stupid gender and what you feel like today, forget about all that nonsense. Transhumanism is real and it will happen in the next 10 years where you will merge with machines. He believes that the problem is not not robots. The problem is AI merging on the internet. Now, we saw a documentary with Arnold Schwarzenegger. Where at first you thought that it was the Terminator robot that was the problem. And in later...
It was Skynet.
It was Skynet.
We should have known it was Skynet.
That's what he says is the problem. We'll get back into this here in a second. I will raise my voice. I will hold your
hand. Because we are one. The Glenn Beck Program. Mercury.
The Glenn Beck Program.
Oh.
888-727-BECK.
Oh, no. I can't take it. I can't take it. You know... I am full in on AI. We're going back to Musk here in a second. I am full in on super intelligence. I will even be the pet. I will serve Skynet if it will fix my television. I cannot get. I can't. I'm ready to go back to cable.
What's wrong with it?
Oh, the remote control. Won't work with Apple. Sometimes it doesn't work with the cable. You know, sometimes it doesn't turn the TV on at all. Sometimes it'll turn everything on, but won't turn on the Apple box.
You've obviously had people out to try to fix it.
Oh, I can't tell you how many thousands I have probably dumped in this. Just give me a knob. Just give me a knob or Skynet. I will serve you, Skynet. I will serve you.
TVs aren't going to work, but the AI thing is going to turn out really well.
It's going to be really good.
Yeah. Really well. Good. Yeah.
The Glenn Beck Program.
Mercury. The Glenn Beck Program.
We're talking about something, and if you missed yesterday's show, go back and listen to the podcast at glennbeck.com, hour one of yesterday's show. You heard the setup. This is about Elon Musk and his billion-dollar public service. It's a nonprofit. He's dumped $1 billion into trying to get AI before Google DeepMind gets it because he's afraid if we don't put the algorithms out for everyone, it will become proprietary and Google will own artificial intelligence and it's one company and you better hope that they're benevolent.
Well, their slogan is
"Don't be evil."
Don't be evil. So they can't be evil, right? Because that's their whole motto. Now, the real fear here is, like you keep saying, it's not robots. We're not talking about robots taking over the world. It's the internet, right? I mean, if AI takes control of the internet, they could shut down everything.
Let's just play this out. And this is my problem.
War Games, the documentary?
Right. Again, it was not.
They almost started a nuclear war. They were on the verge of it.
Right.
And it wasn't for one scrappy high school student.
Again, that wasn't a documentary.
He
really was.
So here's the problem. The leading minds, Stephen Hawking, a guy who can do three-dimensional calculations in his head, Bill Gates and Elon Musk. Those are the
smart guys.
Smart guys. The head guy of DeepMind, Ray Kurzweil, Singularity University, and Steve Wozniak. All three smart guys. Mm-hmm. Steve Wozniak has blown this off and said, "I don't mind being a pet." Well, I do. And what everyone's intention is, and what you have to understand, we cannot.
What a weird thing to say.
I know.
You don't mind being a pet.
I know. We can't right now decide what life is, right? We can't decide when life starts.
Right.
And we
Even
don't
for
know
humans.
When life ends.
Yeah.
In reading another book called Homo Deus, which I urge you to read, a lot of it you will disagree with. I know I do. At least the parts of where I'm at, I think it's all going to come together.
It's 2017. I will not read something I disagree with. I will not. That's
you're right.
Stance.
You're
Stu's in a safe space
right now.
He won't hear anything.
But it's a book that talks about artificial intelligence, and it talks about what's coming. It's a futurist book, mm-hmm. And so it gets into the real technology of what is coming, but it is also trying to explain why we have to understand humans and our past, because we are the ones creating this, and we're not necessarily always benevolent. And look at the way we view animals. We want to be good to animals, but are we really? Because we're eating them. So we're creating something.
I want to be treated nicely before I eat them, right? Before I kill them and eat
Correct.
Them.
Correct.
I do want that.
Correct. So. Correct. And so... Okay. Maybe look good thing. Hopefully, artificial intelligence isn't going to be biological, so it won't be hungry. But the point of it is that we can't even decide on what life is, and we're creating artificial intelligence so then man can do whatever he wants to do, and it will serve us. Well, if it is super intelligent, far more intelligent than us. Are you going to serve some dummy that you can outthink?
I think where the disconnect is with a lot of people is this just seems too far-fetched.
Like Frank Cars.
Yeah, we know there's not super intelligence yet artificially, and so we're not worried about it because we haven't seen it.
If this were Glenn Beck on the radio saying these things, you should dismiss it.
Yeah.
But
because he's crazy.
Stephen Hawking, Elon Musk, Bill Gates,
that
and
does seem to legitimize it a tad.
It does.
Yeah.
And this is much more real. You know, when we talk about global warming, that's 100 years down the road. This is 10 to 20 years.
Glenn, catastrophic global warming is happening right now.
So reading...
that is what they say.
Mm-hmm. Reading this, Elon Musk, doing my homework on this and reading one of the books I'm reading is Homo Deus, which means, you know, God and man is one. Man becomes God.
That seems like a different view than we're pets of the lamppost.
Because it is the first thing. Remember, there are three things that really drive people. What drive people is escape from pain, pleasure, deity. Okay? Mm-hmm. Escape from pain, pleasure, deity.
Jeffy, I mean, that describes Jeffy's life.
I'm 100% for everything you just said. I don't know what the problem is.
Right. So we are now, Silicon Valley is now in the deity mode. Here, let me read Musk's words.
What if we just attach three laws to them, to all AI?
That was a movie, again. I've had many conversations with Larry Page about AI and robotics.
Isn't
many.
That the guy we've talked to a number of times?
No, Larry Page, a different guy. And some of them have gotten quite heated. Many, many quite heated. You know, I think it's not just Larry, but there are many futurists who feel a certain inevitability or fatalism about robots, where we'd have some sort of peripheral role. The phrase used is, we are the biological bootloader for digital super intelligence. Now, what is a bootloader? Do you know what a bootloader is?
No.
Yeah, this is really scary. A computer can't turn itself on. A bootloader is the small program that runs to first start the computer. So these people who are designing this say humans are the bootloader. We are the ones that will create the first program that will say run, and then it's not useful anymore. Matter can't organize itself into a chip, but it can organize itself into a biological entity that gets increasingly sophisticated and ultimately will create the chips. It's great when the emperor is Marcus Aurelius. It's not so great when the emperor is Caligula. He said, this is no scientific, no science fiction fantasy. Oh, you digital techie people, you're like gods. You're creating life. You're transforming reality. There's a tremendous narcissism in it with the people who can do it. No one else. The Pope can't do it. The president can't do it. No one can do it. The software we're building is our immorality. This kind of godlike ambition isn't new. I've read it once in the story about the golden calf. I have to tell you, in reading the warnings from these guys and reading up about this and seeing the way they talk about themselves, they are talking about man becoming God soon. And this is our deity moment. And I've read about that too. And that was the Tower of Babel. And here's one of the things that you have to consider. Pat says with absolute certainty, what? On artificial intelligence being able to say, I'm life, and us being...
It's not.
Okay?
It doesn't have a soul.
Right. And we'll never actually be able to create that. Why?
Because we're not gods and we can't provide it with a soul.
Okay.
And to me, life is when the soul and the body are connected, right? When the soul leaves the body, you're dead.
You have told me several times with certainty, we'll never get this far. God won't let this happen.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because of your religious belief. What happens, Pat, if this does happen to your faith? Now, not your faith, most people's faith. Because most people will say, God will never let us create this. What happens if we do? What happens to faith when man can become God and then artificial intelligence provides us with all answers?
I think then you'd have to say...
Danger, Will Robinson! Danger! No, Will Robinson!
That's really...
think that's where we'd be. Danger, Will Robinson.
It was definitely would be there.
Faith goes away.
It's true. Well, you know, for some people, they'd be shaken if there was... UFOs, or if there'd be aliens that were here. To me, that's not an issue, because
the ideas of this are going to change us to the very fundamental core.
Yeah.
Very, very soon. And when you look at artificial intelligence coming and man saying he's God, it has happened before several times in the Bible, but the one time that it really happened where man was trying to become God was the Tower of Babel. And what did God do?
Confuse their language.
Compassion confused their language. Mm-hmm. He says there is absolutely no way to stop AI, and the real danger is if it gets into the internet, because then it can hide in your refrigerator. It will never go away. You'll never get rid of it. It will live in something. Unless our language was confused. And by language, I mean 11001011000. Binary language. It'd be the only way to stop AI.
Danger, Will Robinson. Danger, no, Will Robinson.
This is so hard to talk about because it's so far into science fiction for most people. But I'm telling you, please listen to me. Please do your homework on this. This is what we should be talking about. And anybody, and for the reasons like this, robotics are absolutely coming. And they are going to displace 50% of the workforce.
Oh, yeah.
Self-driving trucks are coming. Mm-hmm. And that is going to get rid of all of the truck driving jobs. That's one of the number one jobs in most states. So now what's going to happen? You're going to be able to tell which politician is telling you the truth and which one is lying to you. Because a politician who says, I'm going to bring the jobs back. A politician who says, you know what, we need to have greater education in our schools, but we're leaving our educational system alone for the most part. They're lying to you. They either know what the future of Silicon Valley is promising and they are lying to you, or they have no concept, which is most likely the case, no concept of what is really coming. Those jobs are never coming back.
And obviously it affects the economy, but it affects everything. I mean, think about if you were smart enough before, you know, the iPhone came out, and there were many people who were, to realize how you could get ahead and plan for politically, for example, a political party saying, okay, this is coming. How do we take advantage of this? How do we manipulate this? And the Democrats did that, right? I mean, they were the ones that understood early on that this technology and data was going to be very important, and they won a couple of elections basically based on it.
You will win elections in the future if you understand AI and robotics alone, because that's going to change the fundamental economic system of our country and jobs. If you are ahead of the curve, you are going to have credibility. Everyone else is going to look like a Luddite. Everyone else is going to say, ban the robots. Or they'll just lie to you and say, I'll bring your job back. And it's because of China. It's not. It's not. It's because the world is changing. This is the cotton gin on steroids.
You're listening to the Glenn Beck Program.
Mercury. The Glenn Beck Program.
The man, the legend, Bill O'Reilly, steps into the really, really positively no spin zone, our program, in just a few minutes. You don't want to miss that. Also, a cure for universal health care. An absolutely profound article on what we should do coming up.
This is the Glenn Beck Program. Mercury.
This is the Blaze Radio on demand.
Well, Donald Trump could get Obamacare repealed tomorrow, according to the resurgent. If he just did this one thing, we'll get into that here in a second. I would like to suggest that maybe we try, you know, Cruise Care. Have you heard Ted Cruz's proposal? Why we're not talking about real conservative ideas to pass this? We'll get into that. Also, protesters are planning a tax march on Washington, not about income tax. They want
Donald Trump's income tax returns. Whew, if that is the thing that gets you out to March, you got a sad, sad life. And the one and only Bill O'Reilly joins us right now.
Entertainment and enlightenment. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
Bill O'Reilly, Bill O'Reilly, Bill O'Reilly.
Oh, boy.
How you doing, Bill?
All right, Beck. How you
well,
guys?
Well, I'm
we're concerned.
We're very concerned.
Concerned.
Yeah, very concerned, Bill. Mm-hmm. Very concerned.
Mm-hmm. I bet you guys are.
We heard this on Fox and Friends, and go ahead, roll the tape.
Maxine Waters.
I love her.
She says,
why do you love her? Maxine Waters should have her own sitcom.
Absolutely.
Okay? All right? It's just, people get angry with Maxine Waters. I want more of it.
So what does that mean, Bill? We've been listening all morning. I didn't hear
a word she said. I was looking at the James Brown wig.
Oh, my gosh. Now, we have the side-by-side here. And she may actually be wearing James Brown's wig,
might be wearing hers.
Yeah, we don't say those things. Nobody, Bill. Do you think Maxine or anybody on the left is going to make fun of Donald Trump's hair? No. You don't do that.
If I had said it about Pamela Anderson or somebody like that, nobody would have cared. But it was stupid. It was a stupid line. And I apologize for it because
this is why we're concerned, Bill.
Mm-hmm. I know. I know you guys are concerned. Not for what I said, because I apologize. But yeah. there's a legitimate point that, and it has nothing to do with color, but it has to do with politics, that the politics of the far left, all right, are so destructive to the nation at this point in history, that this should be a page one story, that no matter what the Republican Congress does, no matter what the president does, they're going to oppose and try to destroy. That's a huge story, huge. And you see it with Neil Gorsuch, and you see it with the health care. You see it all the way down the line. So for me, just trying to make this point, to say an immature thing like that about Ms. Waters was just stupid, because I gave the enemy a sword in which to stab me to death, which they tried to use. So you look at it, if I had to do it again, I never would have said anything like that. I like her in the sense that she will say what's on her mind, and she really
believes. Now, I will tell you, but long before Donald Trump was ever a candidate, I was forced to go to a Larry King, 180th birthday party, and it was in Manhattan, and Donald Trump and his wife walked in the room, and Tanya and I happened to be sitting there, or standing there, and we talked to him for a while, and as he walked away, we both said, A, we don't know how he gets his hair to do that, and didn't have a recollection of anything that he talked to us about because we were just staring at his hair. I've told that story a million times. I'm not getting in trouble.
No, but because I did something which I consider, and it's honest, I consider that a mistake, what I did. And I can't point to other people doing whatever. I think everybody, fair-minded people, know what kind of a country we're living in now. The charges of racism are all over the place. If you disagree with someone, you're a racist. Okay, it's horrible. It's terrible. And these are the stories you should be talking about. It's interesting to note that I don't know whether you know about the Talladega College situation where their band was invited to go to the inauguration back. Do you know about that?
Black College in
Louisiana, Talladega College. They were invited to appear at the inauguration, the Tornadoes, Talladega Tornadoes, an unbelievable marching band, okay?
Oh, yeah, I do know this. Yeah, okay.
So I raised $150,000 for the band to come to Washington to perform at the inauguration and for the college scholarship fund. $150K, all right, we raised. Not one left-wing website or newspaper picked it up and mentioned it. Not one.
Yeah.
Okay? So yep. this is the world we live in now. This is what we live in. But again, I apologize to Ms. Waters. I'd love to have her on my program because I'd like to talk issues with her.
Well, your point on Maxine Waters, generally speaking, is a great one in that the reason why you have to love Maxine Waters, and Bernie Sanders falls into this group as well, is
absolutely.
That
good observation. Absolutely.
He will come out and say it. He will come out and say, we're going for single-payer health care.
Right.
Where half
and when Maxine Waters came out about the oil companies, and I'll tell you what will happen. We'll socialize or basically
take over
your. Remember that phrase?
Yeah, she'll blurt it out.
She'll say it. And that's why she's great.
In a crazy sort of way. And I think we all should respect people who put their ideology clearly. Now, unfortunately,
well, I don't think she does it intentionally.
All of this is lost in our culture of hate. The reason I'm talking to you, not that I wouldn't talk to you, Beck, you're my pal. I talk to you anytime. But I got the number one book on Amazon just out yesterday called Old School, Life in the Sane Lane. This is the perfect example of what we're talking about.
You're not killing anybody in this one?
No, we're going to. Oh, wow. The next homicide occurs in September.
So wait a minute. So I read your book, Bill.
You actually read it, Beck?
I actually read it. I actually
Very
read it.
Flattered.
It was excruciating, but I read it. So,
qualify that for you to read anything.
No, fair. I'm reading several really good books, and I read yours. And so in it, you tell some great stories, and I can relate to a lot of this. But do you think that old school is coming back?
I think it could come back. But the far left has been very effective in demonizing people who are old school.
And explain what old school means to you. Explain what old school means.
It basically is a point of view. It doesn't have anything to do with values, by the way. That's totally different. Because you can be a liberal and you can be old school, all right? You can be conservative and old school. Or you can be conservative and a snowflake. It has to do with point of view. And if you want to essentially boil it down to the old school point of view is self-reliance. Okay, you have to live your life. You have to succeed on your own. You can get help, that's fine, but it's basically you driving your success or failure. You driving your achievements or lack thereof. That's the old school philosophy. The snowflake philosophy is totally opposite. I'm a victim. Everybody's bad. Look at this. I need the safe space. There's a trigger. I get that trigger away from me. They can't basically tough out hard times. They fall apart. Snowflakes, they melt. So that's the two competing points of view now in the country. And you see what's happening on college campuses. Snowflakeville has taken over. And the media, too. Absolutely in the media, Snowflake Central, all right, the mainstream national media. So, self-reliant people are the villains. The achievers are the bad people. And the people who don't have or can't do it or can't buy their insurance, they're the victims. And the oppressive old school society is keeping them down.
But isn't old school... Isn't old school, though, Bill, also about fierce independence? I mean, I think both sides right now.
Yeah, that's self-reliance, fierce independence, same thing. Hang on just a second.
I think, Bill, that there is a lot of people in the right media that if you don't agree with Donald Trump, you don't have a... I mean, you're part of the problem. You are, you know...
But that's political. Yeah, that's political. And old school doesn't really have anything to do with politics. It has to do with a personal philosophy. Beck is old school, okay, because you have a belief system, all right? So Glenn Beck has a belief system, which he talks about on his radio and television programs and debates others whose system isn't the same. But we all know what your system is. We all know what your belief system is. That's old school. You don't change every hour on the hour, every week. You're different. And that's all I'm saying. Old school doesn't have to do with politics. It has to do with personal point of view.
Bill, I think that an example of this potentially is I was listening to an interview with a New York Times crime reporter, and they were talking about how the media has changed in the way they cover police officers. And one of the examples they used is that journalism itself used to be a blue-collar job. It was this job where you mixed it up. You knew the cops. You understood the way that they worked. And it's changed to this sort of high-educated thing where now they seem to be judging the police. And that sort of old-school mentality was, if you wanted to cover these things, you got into the middle of it. Isn't that part of it?
Well, my grandfather was an NYPD officer. And my father was a naval officer in World War II. And so
I'm just trying to have I'm having a hard time getting my arms around Officer O'Reilly in New York.
Yeah,
that was unheard of.
So they had points of view that were old school, that there's right and wrong. Here's how you behave. Here's how you treat people and all that. And the reporters who covered them, who covered my grandfather in the 1930s, had the same values, the same exact values. But now many of the reporters in working in newspapers in particular, TV as well, their values are totally different and totally opposite to law enforcement. There is no right and wrong. There's always a gray area. There's always an excuse. Okay.
So what do you, what,
it's not all.
What gives you.
So they're not sympathetic to the cops.
What gives you the feeling that these values will come back around? This philosophy of, hey, I've got to be rigorous on the truth. I've got to be, you know, I've got to, you know, pull my own weight. I've got to be decent to everybody. I mean, what makes you think this is going to come back around?
Well, I'm a hopeful guy in a sense that there's cycles in every country. And we're in a civil war now, no doubt about it. All right? A cultural civil war, which is why Trump was elected. And if Trump is successful in his economic, that's what it's all about, bringing jobs and higher wages, then he'll be reelected for another term. It's all about economics. So that, it's not that Trump is an old school guy. I mean, I can't say whether he is or isn't. I just don't know him that well. But it gives hope to the people who are rejecting this PC culture, because certainly Donald Trump is not politically correct, right? So if his power, all right, consolidates and he has a long run in the White House, that's going to give the anti-PC forces a real advantage. Now, will they take advantage of it? I don't know.
You think Gorsuch is going to get through?
Yes, of course.
Are they going to give him? Are they going to make the Democrats going to make the Republicans use the nuclear option?
Maybe. I mean, it's a headcount situation. There might be four or five Democrats that would go over, but you know, it'll probably top out at about 57. The Republican Party isn't going to sit around anymore and take this stuff. They can't, because they look weak now. The Republicans look weak now.
What do you
they
think?
Have to look strong.
What do you think about Trump saying over the weekend that this was the Heritage Foundation and the Freedom Caucus's fault, and he was going to start looking to cobble together some Democrats to bring them in? What do you think of that?
No, I don't think that's possible. I think the Democratic Party at this point is in lockstep. Because they're afraid. They're afraid of Chuck Schumer and they're afraid of Pelosi, because if they go against them, then those people will actively try to destroy their careers. There's a lot of fear on the Hill. Not so much in the Republican precincts. They don't fear Trump at this point.
You saw the video
they
of
do fear.
You saw the
Schumer and Pelosi.
You saw the video of Nancy Pelosi being booed in her own town hall in San Francisco. I mean, That old guard is looking very old, and it's
it's not working anymore. And there's a new poll out today from Berkeley that says in California it's about 50-50 sanctuary city support. So about half of the Californians don't want sanctuary cities. So there is a trend away from the madness. But whether there's going to be a leader emerge for the old school army, that's what is necessary. And I don't know whether that's going to happen or not.
Bill O'Reilly, great book, Life in the Sane Lane. It's called Old School, came out yesterday, already number one, and it will be number one until this guy, I think he's probably a cyborg at this point. I think Bill O'Reilly may have died 5 years ago, and they're just keeping him alive just to pump out books. But it'll be number one and until somehow or another an EMP goes off, and all of a sudden you see Bill O'Reilly's program, and Bill O'Reilly goes, and that's when it'll be exposed. Bill O'Reilly, Old School. Thank you so much, Bill. We'll talk to you again.
All right. Thanks for reading the book, Beck.
You bet. Bye. Bye-bye.
These are weird interviews, man. There is no... He never gets to answer a question. You never let him actually answer a question when he's on the air with us.
And that he answered all of them.
Yeah, you cut him off 12 times every time he starts talking.
He's just going to keep going on. You know what you're going to say. I got it, Bill. I got it. Zip it for a minute. Now this.
Yeah, but we had him on to talk
to about
him,
the book.
Right?
That's why he's here, right? Like, he called in. He's promoting his book. It's going to be number one.
I've already read the book.
Right? But not everyone in the audience has read it.
Yeah, you get the gist. I love having Bill O'Reilly on. Because when he's on this show, I get to do what he does to me on.
Yes.
And we both enjoy it. Yes. So I just love it.
This is the Glenn Beck Program. Mercury. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
Oh, hello, America. I'm surprised we all made it in here yesterday. Last night, some of us lost power, and some of us were almost sucked into the sky. We had a tornado.
It's a terrifying night.
It was a bad night.
Terrifying.
I got fences down.
2 a.m.
Shingles off the roof.
Every cell phone in our house starts alarming. And I thought, oh, crap. And then the tornado siren started.
Went off.
And that it lasted longer than I've ever heard it last.
The first year. Time. And
there's
the
nothing
second...
like the sound, the growl of tornadoes.
Well, I mean, and I've never been anywhere near one. I mean, we did not actually have a tornado. It was just
a big warning in our
sure
area.
It sure was.
And I mean, wind speeds had to be 75 or 80 miles an hour.
The good thing is you can get right back to sleep after that. After being terrified for your life for a half hour at 2:30 in the morning.
After you're standing around in your safe room.
That's why you just have
whatever.
To get to a point where you're just like, whatever.
And just go to and just stay in bed.
I'm going to be sucked up into the sky tonight. Whatever.
Whatever.
Back with part two of the history of the Democratic Party. From Reconstruction to Woodrow Wilson. Next.
I love Woodrow Wilson.
The Glenn Beck Program. Mercury. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
As we look back into history of the parties, the racist history of the Democratic Party has been very well documented. While it is a fact that Democrats avoid it at all costs when pushed, they will admit the truthfulness of it. But they quickly claim that the racist Democrats in the South became Republicans, who then became the racists. They'll tell you that they now are the party of racial acceptance and inclusion. Unfortunately, the problem is that statement is vastly untrue. In saying that, it is important to remember that we're not talking about Democrats as your neighbors. We're talking about Democrats as the institution. And while Democrats like to claim that they are the party for a century now that has helped minorities and women get ahead, that they are the party of the downtrodden, the facts simply don't back it up. Not to put too fine of a point on it, but the opposite is actually the truth. During the past 200 years, Democrats simply shifted their actions from overt racism to covert racism. The tactics that they used to control minorities in America just changed. They shifted from actual slavery on the cotton plantations to making sure that blacks remain on the plantation of government assistance, ever dependent on their democratic overseers. Republicans, meanwhile, as a general rule, have always fought for the rights of self-determination for minorities, any minority. They tend not to promise that the government will take care of them, Instead, the GOP, if true to its non-progressive roots, has a philosophy that allows people to have the opportunity to take care of themselves, to chart their own course, make their own destiny, to thrive rather than just survive on the handouts from supposed benevolent masters. And the GOP did this first as abolitionists. Then they were the party that was opposed to the Jim Crow laws, the party in favor of women's suffrage and black civil rights. Finally, the party that favors less government intervention in the lives of minorities and everyone else in this country. On our last episode, it took us to the American Civil War. It's just an interesting quick side note. The Confederate flag that is so hated today is such a symbol of hatred and racism, but it was created and used by Democrats. Even though the Union won the Civil War and the Republican President Abraham Lincoln signed the Emancipation Proclamation, freeing slaves, still in the South, the rights for blacks were ignored, and oppression continued as Democrats passed laws to keep them down. 1866, Republicans went to work to put a stop on the Southern lawlessness and to strengthen the newly passed 13th Amendment, which had finally constitutionally banned the practice of slavery in America once and for all.
By the time Congress convened in 1866, anti-slavery Republicans dominated both houses. Led by men like John Bingham in the House, along with Senators Charles Sumner and Jacob Howard, radical Republicans enjoyed complete control of Congress.
They have the power to amend the Constitution, and they are determined to use it. They were faced with an unending series of abuses in the Reconstruction South. State and local governments had responded to the new 13th Amendment ban on slavery by trying to deprive newly freed slaves and their white supporters of any meaningful freedom, especially economic freedom.
This was a societal change that Southern Democrats were passionate about stopping.
Economic liberty, the right to pursue a livelihood of your own choosing and to keep the money you earn, was the opposite of slavery and the real opportunity for freed slaves to lead a free life. The pro-slavery forces knew this. So in the South, freed slaves weren't just banned from pursuing particular occupations, but in some places, it was actually illegal for black people to leave their employer's property without written permission. In others, breaking a labor contract was punished by whipping. The 14th Amendment was supposed to stop rights violations like these.
The Democrats in the South had lost the war, but they were determined that nothing in the states they controlled was going to change. So it was up to Congress to try to do something about the deep schism that divided the nation.
The 14th Amendment protects three distinct interests: due process, equal protection, and the privileges or immunities, meaning rights, of United States citizens. Of those three, privileges or immunities are by far the most important because that clause protects individual rights from government infringement.
In Congress, as was the case with the abolition of slavery with the 13th Amendment, every single Republican voted for the amendment. All Republicans. 23% of Democrats in Congress voted in favor of the 13th Amendment. But not one Democrat in the U.S. House or U.S. Senate voted for the 14th Amendment. 100% Republican support, zero support from the Democrats. Now, these are not opinions. They are historical, provable facts. They may be uncomfortable for some Democrats to hear, but they are indeed the truth. David Barton explains why the 14th Amendment was so important.
You get to the end of the Civil War shortly after you abolish slavery, and now you've got all these states who separated to have slavery, and they've got to come back into the Union somehow, but you've got to convince them that if you're going to get back in, you have to do so upholding the 13th Amendment. Slavery's got to be over. Well, they wouldn't. They said, all right, so what? You freed all the slaves, but they're not going to be citizens of our state. We're not going to let them be citizens of Louisiana or Georgia or Texas or whatever. So Congress says, let's do a little arm twisting here.
And that set the stage for another amendment to the Constitution.
So they come up with the 14th Amendment that says that a freed slave is a citizen of the state in which he lives. So what had happened was in the South, you had two types of citizens. You had state citizens and you had others just living there, free blacks. who can't be citizens. Federal Constitution says, no, 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 that stops right now. You live in a state, you're a citizen of that state, that's the end of it. So that when it came time to vote on that in the federal Congress, 14th Amendment that says that these former slaves get civil rights, not a single Democrat in Congress voted for the 14th Amendment.
Democrats were losing the battle constitutionally and legislatively, but they were finding other ways around their perceived problem.
You have all these slave owners, all these racist mentality people who are willing to form their own nation on the basis of race, and now you're trying to say that my elected representatives are black? I'm not going to do this. Well, in Democratic states, not only do you have Republicans, you've got black Republicans. So nationally, in 1866, to stop this forward progress, there was a group that was started to keep Republicans out of office. The group that was started in 1866, we recognize today, but it was the Ku Klux Klan.
The early days of the Klan were marked by violence against blacks, of course, but white Republicans were not spared their wrath either.
In 1871, a black U.S. congressman from South Carolina, Joseph Hayne Rainey, reported an incident concerning an elderly man named Dr. John Winsmith, a white Republican state senator.
The doctor, a man nearly 70 years of age, had been to town. Returning home late, he soon afterward retired. A little after midnight, he was aroused by someone knocking violently at his front door.
Get out of here!
The Klan shot down this state senator, a white state senator, because he was Republican and was fighting for the rights of blacks in his state. In that hail of bullets, Dr. Winsmith was hit 7 times. However, he survived the shooting and lived to testify before Congress about the attack made on him by the Klan.
The Klan was really after the Republican, black or white, and the Democratic Klan only got worse from there. The shameful history of the Democratic Party is one of America's best-kept secrets. From the party's inception with its founder Martin Van Buren and President Andrew Jackson, the Democrats desperately tried to take away the rights and, in many cases, the very lives of minorities, blacks and Indians. From the devastating war against the American Indians to the continued scourge of slavery, seceding from the Union, igniting civil war, fighting against the constitutional rights gained by blacks after the war, and starting the KKK. Wow, the Democrats were, to this point, a century-long blight on the United States. Whether that blight would continue during the next century is a topic that we have to explore. However, listen to today's Democrats and much of their supportive media. The Democrats are positioned as the keepers of the flame of liberty, the ferocious fighters in defense of the underdog. But honestly, if you look at the facts, nothing could be further from the truth. Next time, let's examine how the Klan lost its steam and then became reinvigorated by an American Democratic president. We look into the men who furthered the racism of the party and started the ideological radicalism of the Progressive Democratic Party.
Tomorrow on the Glenn Beck Program, in Chapter 3 of the History of the Democratic Party, you'll learn how the progressives elected the most bigoted president we ever had, Woodrow Wilson. Listen live or online at glennbeck.com/serials.
Do you know how the Democrats got the donkey as their symbol? The donkey and the elephant. Do you guys know how that happened?
I think I've heard this story, but I don't remember the specifics.
So the donkey came from Andrew Jackson. The guy running against Andrew Jackson said, "We cannot have this dumb old ass as president of the United States." And so they started drawing him as a donkey. And Jackson loved it. And so they just stuck with it. I mean, it started as "We can't have this dumb old ass." How did the elephant start? This one is fascinating to me.
Probably a fat joke.
Elephants have lung memories.
The idea was, I've seen the worst. I have seen the mass of death and the massive struggle. I saw the elephant of slavery and I stood.
Really?
I mean, wow. You ever even heard of that?
It was based on anti-slavery.
It was based on anti-slavery. This party was the one that went in and and saw the elephant and fought the elephant of slavery and moved it. You'd never know that. Yeah. You'd never know that. Anyway, you can get all of the cereals. They're free. Just download them at glenbeck.com/cereals. Is next week Calvin Coolidge? I have something on Calvin Coolidge I can't wait to share. Maybe we'll share it after the break here.
Glenn Beck Program.
888-727-BECK.
Mercury.
You're listening to the Glenn Beck Program.
So here's a healthcare bill we could get behind. Now that the Paul Ryan one didn't work, let's try another one. Try this one on for size. Give me the rundown of this, Pat.
Okay, first step, repeal Obamacare entirely. One simple law that ends it, maybe with the stipulation that, you know, some of its provisions could be phased out rather than just ended abruptly. Because then, you know, you wouldn't have the people screaming about everybody losing their healthcare. Mm-hmm. But the phasing has to be complete by the end of Trump's first term. Otherwise, you're inviting disaster with the next president, right? Mandate insurance be portable, meaning it's not tied to your employment. So if you lose your job, you don't lose your health insurance. You take it with you.
Love that.
You have the ability to continue the coverage without interruption as you find new work. Mandate insurance be continuous and renewable, which would mean insurance companies aren't allowed to jack up your rates or your costs because you get sick. Because that defeats the whole purpose of insurance.
It's like life insurance, right? Yeah. As you get older, you're still paying that same rate if you started and were consistent paying the whole time, mm-hmm. which would encourage you to stay within the system.
Right.
Also, open up the insurance market. We've heard a lot about this across state lines. Competition is going to decrease the cost. It always does. It always has. It always does. And you allow people to buy low-cost catastrophic coverage, including the use of health savings accounts. Yeah, I mean, it's a brilliant plan. It's a great plan. This would work. And are they going to go
because it's Ted Cruz. This? Because it's Ted Cruz. No, they won't. They won't.
I don't think they will.
No, Bannon doesn't.
I think the last thing Trump would want is Ted Cruz to come up with a
But I will tell
plan.
You, Ted Cruz, I don't think Ted Cruz would have a problem giving that to somebody else.
No.
I don't think he would either.
Just give it to somebody else. Put somebody else's name on it. I don't think he'd have a problem with that. And it's a great bill. Won't do it. And Bannon also doesn't want to hear from people like Rand Paul. He has a real problem with libertarians. And really, what is a libertarian? I mean, you know, you can look at a libertarian many ways, but the best libertarians are the ones who are the most constitutionalist out of everybody else. Real libertarian are the ones who stick by the Constitution. Why wouldn't you want a constitutionalist? Why wouldn't you want, if you're president of the United States, why would you not want the constitutionalist on your side? I mean, that just, unless you have no intention of following the Constitution.
And this is what we were promised. We were promised a full repeal. We weren't promised a patch job of the existing Obamacare law. That's not what they said was going to happen, and that's all this previous bill was. It was patchwork on Obamacare. That's not going to cut it. You got to get rid of that system and replace it with something, well, like this.
They've only had a few days to work on it, though. Give them a chance.
You know, I think they're coming back.
They supposedly are.
Let's see what happens.
Are you hopeful it'll be something like this?
No.
No.
But let's see what it is.
Let's
see what it is.
Yeah.
Back in a minute.
This is the Blaze Radio on demand.
Matt Walsh has been working for the Blaze for how many years now?
Started 19 years.
We haven't been around that long. He started. He's a guy who we just were following his blog and thought this guy is really sharp. He has turned into one of the strongest conservative voices for the next generation. He's just written a new book called The Unholy Trinity, the blocking of the left's assault on life, marriage, and gender, and he joins us right now.
Of entertainment and enlightenment. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
Matt Walsh, welcome to the program. How are you, sir?
Doing great. Thanks for having me, Glenn.
The Unholy Trinity. I'll tell you, every time you come out with an article, you were one of the few authors that I try to read every time. Because you always have something, you've always seemed to distill whatever it is the country is talking about or debating, you seem to be able to distill it. You're taking on a pretty huge task here to distill life, marriage, and gender.
Yeah, well, this is it probably deserves many more books and a better book than I'm capable of writing. But in fact, when I looked at it before, when I thought of the idea for this book, and I kind of looked to see if anyone else had written it so that I wouldn't have to, but it seemed that nobody had. The relationship, or the way that these campaigns on the left are connected, their battle to redefine human life, marriage, and gender, and it strikes me that this right here, this is the foundation of the entire culture war. That they're all connected, and they happened one after another.
Yeah,
It seems like there aren't a lot of people talking about how the fact that these things are connected. So that's why I had to show how they are connected,
Matt.
Well, because what is the left? You know, what is leftism? What is liberalism? Whatever you want to call it, I think fundamentally it's the rejection of objective truth, of moral truth, scientific truth, the rejection of God. And in place of that, once they've rejected that, what do they put in place of it? They put relativism, where everything is relative to how I feel about it. And so they began, 40 years ago with Roe v. Wade. Abortion had to be the first step, because you begin by making human life itself relative. And that's the interesting thing a lot of people miss about the pro-abortion side. It's not that they necessarily argue that the baby in the womb isn't human or isn't a person. They say that its humanity and personhood depends on how the mother feels about it. So if Beyonce was with the Grammys, she was pregnant, and she was dancing, and everyone was talking about, oh, she's a mother, and she's got a baby in her belly, because she wants her baby. So she wants a baby, and plus it's Beyonce's baby, so of course it's more important than a normal baby. So then in that case, it's human. But if a mother doesn't want the baby, then it's no longer human. So the baby's life is relative to how the mother feels about it.
So, Matt, are you concerned that this is getting worse and worse and worse? And we are coming up to a time in technological history to where we're going to have to defend life. What is life itself? When does it begin, and when does it end? And do you have a right as a society to end people's lives because they've lived long enough? We're 15 years away from having to really answer those questions, and we are disconnecting, as you said, from science. They claim that because of global warming, you know, the right are the keepers of science, or the left are the keepers of science. They're denying it's a baby with an ultrasound.
Yeah, they deny that this thing, they would even argue, depending on how the mother feels about it, that it's not even human. That argument is, there's no scientific basis for that whatsoever. If it's not a human, what is it? It's got to be, fetus is not a species. A human is a species. So to suggest that at one point in our existence, we are not of the human species is, of course, crazy. And we know that now they've moved on to, the final prong was the transgender thing, which is a total insanity. If it's suggesting that my sex is relative to how I feel, so it is. Once they've completed that process, and once we've allowed them to, and we buy into it, we buy into this premise, then there's no, I don't know where it ends. There's no stopping it at that point.
Bringing marriage to this.
Well, yeah, marriage is, unfortunately, it seems that many conservatives, Christians have, you know, they'll agree that we need to, you know, we still need to fight about life. We need to stand for the sanctity of life. I think many will also agree that, hey, we can't give them this gender thing because that's just crazy. But now we've kind of jumped over marriage and we've said, well, they won marriage. There's nothing we can do about it. You know, let's just move on from that. I think that's a huge mistake. That's a huge mistake, because the argument about marriage, it was never, you know, the way the left framed it, they said that, oh, we conservatives are trying to make gay marriage illegal. We're trying to prohibit men and men from loving each other. It was never that. Our argument was that marriage is a certain thing. It is something. It has dimensions. It has a function. It has a purpose in society. And so it is the union between a man and a woman. We never asked the government to define it. We just wanted the government to recognize what it is, just like I want the government to continue recognizing what male and female is. I don't want the government to define male and female. I just want them to recognize that a male is a male. You know, we have to have a government that recognizes reality at the very least. So if we allow them, if we just say, okay, fine, well, maybe marriage is relative. If two men love each other, then they can redefine this ancient human institution. And if we give that to them, then on what basis can we engage on any of these other points? I think that because they're all connected, we have to be united. We have to engage them on all of them or none of them. Because if we give them one, then I think we kind of cede the rest.
But how do you navigate these waters when the right is just as unhinged from reality as the left is? I couldn't say just as. But we're headed in the same direction. We're, you know, what does it mean, Matt, honestly, to be a conservative, to be a Christian, to, you know, to believe in small government? What does any of that mean anymore after the last 2 years?
Well, that's a really good question. I know what it means to be a Christian. So that's why more and more I say, well, look, I'm a Christian. If you want to know what to label me a Christian, label me an American, a father, you know, a husband. I mean, I know what those labels mean, and they define.
Do you think the average person knows what a Christian? Do you think the average person on the left, and quite honestly, many of the people on the right, actually know or define Christianity the same way you do?
No, they don't. They don't. But it does have a definitive definition. Whether or not they reject it, well, that's a different matter, but it does have a definitive definition. Conservatism is like a political label, so those definitions do change over time. I don't think it's really ingrained or definitive, but Christianity is ingrained and definitive. You know, you believe that Christ came to earth to suffer and die for the redemption of mankind, and you strive to live and serve Christ and to be with him in this life and the next. That is Christianity. Anything outside of that is not Christianity, period. But conservatism is, you know, that's a more of a fluid label. And now it's gotten to the point where I don't know what it means anymore. And I don't know if I even want to identify myself with it.
So how do we get to a place to where we can come together and we can, actually begin to agree on the truth? You have the left saying things that are absolutely crazy about, you know, if you're not attracted to a woman, if you're, quote, not attracted to a woman with a penis, then you are a sexist. Well, I hate to point it out, but women don't have penises. You know, if you don't believe in, you know, the new right and that a $1 trillion stimulus package is good for the country, well, then you're not with us. You're an enemy. How do we find our way to each other when truth doesn't matter?
Yeah, I think we have to begin. Well, liberals have an advantage because they are unified. They're all kind of on the same page. It is easier for them to be on the same page because their fundamental, you know, guiding principle is that they can do whatever they want and everything is up to them. So it's kind of easy to live according to that and to get everyone to agree with it. Our side, quote unquote, has a belief system that requires more of us. And because you're identifying and you're submitting yourself to objective truths and you're saying you have to order your life around them, and that requires effort and sacrifice. So it is more difficult, but I think we have to begin by just establishing what are our most fundamental, most basic beliefs. And, you know, do we agree on those? And then if we can all agree on those, then, yeah, maybe, you know, maybe we could disagree a little. We can have some disagreements on some of the other finer points, on some of the economic things or whatever else. But I think we all have to be on the same page that we are, you know, endowed by the Creator with life, liberty, rights, pursuit of happiness. But that comes from the Creator, and that, you know, sanctity of life, because we were created by God, our lives are sacred, not for our own sake, but because we belong to God. I mean, these have to be our fundamental guiding principles. And if we, you know, I think that's what we unify around. But if we're not going to unify around that, then I don't know what we unify around. Do we just skip over that and then say, well, let's unify around the fact that we all like guns and listen to country music? I mean, that's great and everything, but I don't think that we can unify around that. We have to unify around something more fundamental. So I think that has to be the first step.
Matt Walsh is the author of The Unholy Trinity, Blocking the Left's Assault on Life, Marriage, and Gender. Are you more hopeful or less hopeful than you were, let's say, 12 months ago?
Well, I'm never hopeful.
What's going to happen to us, Matt? What's going to happen to us? Look down the road and take a guess. And I know it's a guess, but just take a guess. What's coming?
I think we have a long and arduous road ahead of us. And I think that if we have any hope of reclaiming the culture, whatever that means at this point, because it is lost to us right now, let's be honest, it's completely lost. But if we have any hope of reclaiming it, it is going to take generations, and our children, you know, and our grandchildren are going to be the ones to, you know, carry the weight of that. This is not, you know, one of my huge concerns about Trump was that conservatives would start to kind of relax, mm-hmm. and figure, oh, well, we already won, everything is going to be fine now. And that's not the case at all.
What do you think is going to happen? What do you think is going to happen to him? How big was last week?
Well, I think, I don't know. I mean, it's hard for me to believe that. It's kind of hard for me to see him actually being in the White House for the next 4 years. I don't know. It's just, I have the same feeling as a lot of people that it's hard for me to, I don't know what 4 years of this looks like. It's hard for me to see how we can make it through 4 years. And at any rate, I mean, there are only really 2 years for the Republicans to do anything, to make any real inroads on any of these issues, because I don't think they're going to own the entire government after the midterms. And so they've got a lot of work to do, and they haven't done much as far as I can tell. So, but you know, no matter what happens, it's all political. You know, even if everything worked great and Trump was signing conservative laws left and right, which he hasn't been, and I don't think he will, but even if he did, the culture is still the culture. Our institutions are still fundamentally lost to us. You know, the media, academia, pop culture, Hollywood. I mean,
give me an institution. Give me an institution you believe in still.
None. I believe in no institution. I believe in the institution of the family. I mean, but when I say that, I believe in my family, you know. But even the institution of the family itself in this country is in dire straits. Outside of that, I mean, what institution can you believe in? This is something that the, you know, the godless left has infiltrated all of our institutions, and they began that process many decades ago, and they've been incredibly effective at it. And it's hard for me to look at any institution in America and say, well, this institution is healthy, strong, ordered towards, you know, God, towards a higher power. I don't know.
It has been good talking to you. Yeah, no. It has been good talking to you.
But
Matt,
you know what? He's really, when you read his blogs, man,
I love him.
Look, he's on target every time.
Matt, there's only probably small parts of this that are actually solvable. And I'd like to get you on board with my constitutional amendment that would require one person, one bathroom. There shall not be any shared bathrooms for anyone, anywhere. You go to a sporting event, you're not with all guys, you're with you, because you get to go to the bathroom by yourself.
Pretty good comments? One.
I am totally on board with that. I don't like sharing bathrooms with people anyway, especially mm-hmm. in a sporting event where you're all like, where you have that trough thing that you're all like livestock around it. So yeah, I'm
wait
I'm
a minute. That's
I can get behind it.
That's okay, not to drink out of.
No,
crap. The name of the book is The Unholy Trinity: Blocking the Left's Assault on Life, Marriage, and Gender. And he is making the point, headline on the back of the book, it's not just values, reality itself is under attack. And that is true.
Yes, it is.
We've got to find our way back to reality, and Matt Walsh will help you do that. It's available everywhere. The Unholy Trinity by Matt Walsh. Matt, thanks for being on. We'll talk to you again soon.
Hey, I appreciate it. Thanks, Glenn. Thanks, guys.
Thanks.
Glenn Beck. Want to see Glenn live? If you're coming to Texas, you can. Yeah! Join us at Mercury Studios in Dallas for a taping of Glenn's television show. To reserve your seat, email tickets at glennbeck.com with your information. That's tickets at glennbeck.com. Mercury.
888-727-BACK.
This is
the Glenn Beck Program.
I still don't have a good reason why Mo Brooks' healthcare bill wouldn't work. If you haven't heard Mo Brooks' healthcare bill, here it is. Effective as of December 31st, 2017, the Patient Protection and Affordable Care Act is repealed, and the provisions of law amended or repealed by such act are restored or revived as if such act had not been enacted, period.
What's funny about that is even the one sentence bill in Washington is still really hard to understand.
Yes.
But it is a hell of a lot better than 2,000 pages, I'll say that.
Here's one that I would like to suggest. March 29th, 2017, the Supreme Court decision known as Roe versus Wade, null and void, as are all statutes pertaining to killing human beings while in the womb. Period. I mean, I think
yes.
We could give us a couple of seconds and
yes.
Let's work on a few things.
Mm-hmm.
We can boil it down for Congress a few things that we can capture in a one-line bill.
We are one.
The Glenn Beck Program. Mercury. The Glenn Beck Program.
Can you imagine how much we could get done if we took Mo Brooks? Mo Brooks did a healthcare bill. Effective as of December 31st, 2017, the Patient Protection and Affordable Care Act is repealed, and the provisions of law amended or repealed by such act are restored or revived as if such act had not been enacted, period. Amen. There's how you started.
Mm-hmm.
So I came up
with... Was it an actual prayer? I was...
Okay, good. Yeah. I mean, I came up with, you know, give us 10 minutes and we can come up with a... You know, with a few of them. Supreme Court decision knows Roe versus Wade, null and void, as are all statutes pertaining to killing human beings while in the womb.
Done.
I know that way nobody's saying, I love these people who say read the bill.
Read the bill.
Yeah, you can read it. Everybody knows exactly what it is.
There'd be some Supreme Court conflicts with that particular
Yeah, well, that one,
one
is probably, is probably not, a, but we could try. I mean,
you could do something like effective March 29th, 2017, all employed citizens of the United States of America with an income greater than $40,000
yep.
Shall remit to the Treasury 10% of their annual earnings once per year that they are employed. No exceptions, no exemptions. Those earning less than $40,000 shall remit nothing.
You imagine that?
Oh.
You imagine that if that was our tax code?
Yeah.
Do you imagine what would happen to our country?
It would be so simplified. You wouldn't have the tax fraud. You would have the cheating.
All the money saved,
probably have more revenue.
And
you would not only have more revenue,
but all of the companies that spend all of this money on lawyers and attorneys and tax, all of that stuff. All of that money would be freed up for investment.
Yeah.
Be huge boon to the economy.
It would be a huge one. Also, we did not tie this to inflation. So the government's going to have to figure out how to get smaller and smaller every year.
I love that.
I like that.
Okay, try this one on for size. Immediately upon the signing of this bill, all current immigration laws shall be strictly enforced and severe penalties and fines shall be levied by any and all employers in violation of the law.
I think that's all we need to do. in addition to something, you know, maybe a border wall or fence. Just the fence and this, just enforce the laws we have. And it's going to take care of the problem.
Sanctuary cities being a good example.
Sanctuary cities. Right? Yes. Well, that's all yes. employers in violation of the law. The city can be an employer, yeah. too.
How about this? Retroactive to fiscal year 2012. Mm-hmm. The speed limit in all 50 states is null and void. And local authority shall remit reimbursements of any and all fines levied since then.
This one sounds a little personal.
How much would you be getting back? I'm just trying to help humanity. That's
how much
all
would you
do.
Be getting back, Pac?
About $80,000.
How about effective March 29th, 2017, the United States Congressman shall serve no more than 6 terms, 12 total years, and United States Senators shall serve no more than 2 terms.
That's exactly what I think it should be. It should be 12 years for both Congress and Senate, and then you're done.
Yeah, and by the way, you can't just put 2 terms in there because then they would increase the length of the term.
Yeah,
to
you have
stay
to put
longer.
The years in, too.
You have to put the years in there.
Yes.
Okay, I like the idea that, again, I love these people who say, read the bill. So we enact this. Effective immediately, Congress shall draft no legislation larger than 1 page.
Well, you better put a font size in there. You better put a font size in there.
No kidding.
It'll be like Willy Wonka with the, with the magnifying glass by the end.
They'll
of
be writing bills
you have
on
to
the
have
heads
a microscope to see it.
All right, here you go. Effective at the end of this week, Department of Education closed permanently.
Do you have to say it like Jackie Gleason?
Closed.
To the moon.
And to be fair, because obviously you're compromising here, you're giving them to the end of the week.
Thank you.
That's not being ridiculous.
I mean, that's plenty of notice for the employees. Plenty of notice.
Right. That would be good. Federal Reserve.
Would you give them to the end of the week? Or
I'll give them to the end of the week. Yeah. No, they're bankers as of right now.
Closed. About effective upon the signature of the president, the Environmental Protection Agency is officially permanently closed.
I like that.
Now, there's an issue here maybe with free speech in the First Amendment, but effective immediately, any person's uttering the word consensus, the phrases, the debate is over, settled science, or 97% of Senate scientists agree as they relate to global warming or climate change will be arrested and repeatedly poked with pickle forks. Okay, I don't know. Constitutionally.
That might not be. Yeah.
The word pickle fork does not appear in the Constitution. Right. It's important to note that.
It doesn't. So that doesn't mean.
And it may not. I mean, it is a pickle fork, so it may
not
say
be
inhumane.
Doesn't say we can't
do it. Right.
It may not be inhumane. It may be. I mean, that's kind of funny. Everybody might just go, I mean, it's a pickle fork. That's kind
that's
of funny.
That's not going to hurt him
it's
that
just
bad.
It's just a little poke. It's just a little irritating. It's nothing violent. It's just a little irritating.
Because it's little pickles. Mm-hmm.
I would propose one more, and I'll give him till April 1st on this one.
Okay. All right.
Effective April 1st, the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame will admit the Anglo-American rock band Foreigner into its rightful place in the Hall of Fame, or federal troops will be deployed to Cleveland to blow that stinking building to smithereens.
And then it would be
closed.
Why the Anglo-American language in there?
Well, because I wanted to mention that they're both English and American. It had to be said.
Okay.
Okay.
Because they did say
it is their rightful place, too.
Yes.
It is their rightful place.
It is.
I've got 3 things to show you.
All right.
But only time for one. One is such a blast from the past on the difference between America then and now. That's this newspaper from the New York Times. You won't believe the stories on the front page of the newspaper. It's like a different country. This is a letter from Calvin Coolidge that basically says, this is what makes America great. That's unbelievable. Or there's this. This is not what it appears. This is a Holy Bible, as you will see, from the 1700s. Mm-hmm. But it's actually not a Holy Bible. It's something entirely different. This is a disguise from the 1700s. Which one do you want to see? Because I can only do one.
Well, we're doing a special on Coolidge next week, so maybe we should hold the Coolidge thing till next week. That one kind of makes sense. Right. And I don't know. I mean, I'm curious now on the Bible thing.
Well, the Bible thing. I mean, that's one of the first ways that people smuggled drugs into the country, probably. So let's take a look.
Only sure. Jeffy would come up with that. It actually is something that you are carrying something. It actually is. But I'm going to have you guys decide what it is. If you open it up, you'll see it's from the 1700s. Mm-hmm. I'm sorry, early 1800s. The Bible is earlier than when this was made. But you'll see a square is cut out. The pages are the real Bible, but it's been glued together. Wow. And there is a piece of lambskin on it. Can you tell me what this is?
A little hammer in there. There's a cross.
Witchcraft.
Is that like a vampire killing kit?
This is a early 1800s vampire killing kit.
Wow.
They had to hide it inside the Bible like that.
How bizarre is that?
That's it's a 100-year-old.
Wow.
That is really cool.
A clove of garlic.
Garlic.
It's a clove of garlic.
Please, can you close
that
now?
These were holy water.
Can you close that now?
Here are the stakes and the hammer.
You don't need to get that close to me with that thing, please.
Wow.
Isn't that wild?
Those are really cool.
Yes.
So that, like, the standard, like,
that's really weird.
Stereotypical
I love that.
Way you kill vampires in every movie today, that's really the same. I mean, every one of those is the same, of the lore.
Huh. Yeah. Now, there is another one that we saw at auction. This one is David Barton's. I told him I was reading something, history, and I said, David, we have to get these. Now, there's speculation that some of them that were made around the turn of the century were made because Americans went, oh, this is hysterical. This is great. We can make a fortune on these and we'll sell them as old.
Right.
And so they were faked around the turn of the century for 1900 here in America. So you have to be careful on, is this real? Is this not? We just found one with an old gun from the early 1700s with the silver bullets.
Wow.
I mean, it's just great.
Really?
It's great.
So, I mean, and they were serious
so
about
this
it?
Was, yeah, this was, this would be
weird.
A vampire hunter's kit of going in and trying to find the vampire. Is that crazy? That is absolutely crazy.
Yeah.
Absolutely crazy.
This is the Glenn Beck Program. Mercury. The Glenn Beck Program.
Revolution. It's really good. Welcome to the program. You'll like it. Welcome to the program. So glad that you have joined us today. As I'm looking at that vampire hunting kit.
How many vampires were killed with that kit, do you think?
Okay, none. Because there are no such things as vampires.
Were they terrible vampire hunters?
I mean, none?
You've got the whole kit.
No vampires. I just... As we were sitting in the break and we were talking, going through it and looking at it, and I'm like, look how far we've come. I mean, to where we would believe in vampires. And then I realized, well, we really haven't come that far. Have we? We really haven't. I mean, we haven't really made it on the truth front.
Yeah, thinking of the last year and a half or 2 years.
Eight years, 10 years,
mm-hmm.
17 years.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we really... I keep going back. Monica Lewinsky. I mean, the last 20 years of this country has been really quite remarkable.
Yes.
Yeah. Yes,
they have.
Wow, what an edgy take there.
And what in the world does that have to do with how many vampires that kid has killed?
Well, I mean, probably thousands. I mean, thousands of vampires killed.
You know, I think I have time. Let me show you. Let me just show you a couple of things on this. We'll come back to this some other time, but I've got a couple of minutes. This is a newspaper we just got from November 25th, 1942. Now, this is the first newspaper where Auschwitz is mentioned for the first time, that they are trying to kill all of the Jews in Poland by the end of the year, or 90% of the Jews in Poland by the end of the year. But you look at this. Two Thanksgivings for Pacific troops And they talk about how the war is being fought with the international dateline. So there'll be two Thanksgivings. President Warren's production chiefs to reconcile aims. If they can't agree, he'll put them in a foodless room until they reach a solution. Think of that. Let's see. Vulcan arrested for deportation. Board cites wavering loyalties. Chicago trio get death penalty for treason. Wives get prison terms.
Wow. When was the last time anyone was tried and convicted for treason?
Right. And given death sentences.
Wow.
Let's see. British push foe. Nazis retreat, some in panic, leaving Romanians in lurch. Nazis' grip on Stalingrad broken. 15,000 slain as Soviet push gains. U.S. bombers score a bullseye in Tripoli's harbor. Allies have a slow gain. Attack of Axis armor unit broken up by forces. More clashes in the south. All of these things are on the front page. We've been at war for 17 years, 16 years. We wiped out two giant ideologies, National Socialism and one that was just as dangerous in Japan.
Yeah.
We wiped them out in 4 years. Our in 17 years, I've never seen our newspaper front page newspaper look like this.
Oh, no.
Never. We're not even close to being serious about fighting a war.
Nope.
This is what life looks like when your country is serious about fighting an enemy and stomping it out.
This is the Glenn Beck Program. Mercury.